Good to see all of you here this morning. I was at the first service. It was just as good to see them, and I'm with Sam. I'm ready for us to see all of us together once again. But until that time comes, we're going to keep pushing on, doing as best we can to serve God and to glorify Him for everything that He is, everything that He's done for us. Because even with such a rough year as we've had, how blessed of a people we truly are. And God has is the simple fact we're together this morning. If you are still in Colossians chapter 3, that's where we're going to reside for most of our lesson this morning. Colossians chapter 3. You know, as you go through the New Testament and you see the things that Paul and Peter and John and the apostles have pinned down for us, you see several lists of things that are directed to us as Christians that we might take on to ourselves, that we might use in our everyday lives. And Colossians chapter 3 is no different. That's exactly what Paul does. And as Brother John read for us, verses 12 through 17, what you see is a list of things that we are to take on in our everyday lives. Because this is what Christ likeness is all about. This is what being a brother in Christ is all about, is putting on these things. And I want you to notice that phrase that he uses on multiple occasions. First in verse 12, where he says, "Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved," that's how he describes us as Christians. He then says, "Put on, put on." And he goes on to talk about tender mercies and putting on kindness and humility. Now, I looked up the phrase that's used there, the phrase put on. The Greek word that's actually used, and I'm in the wrong, about to talk to y'all about integrity. Here, let me flip another page. We talked about that last week. We better not talk about it again. Here, the word is enduio. And what the word means is to sink into, and in parentheses there it had clothing, to sink into clothing. Or to put on or to clothe oneself. And I think it's interesting that Paul uses this phrase, to put on, as if you were putting on clothing. And what he's trying to get across to us is it should be as common as putting on your daily clothes, putting on your daily apparel, that when you wake up in the morning, that you put on these characteristics of Christ, just as you're going to put on your clothes. You know, you sometimes have seen probably the funny videos of parents who want to experiment with their young kids, and they let them pick out their outfit. Some of y'all might have done that before. How does that normally turn out? It's normally a disaster, right? Not only might they have the wrong clothes on or put on in the wrong way, but what they put together as children is probably just awful and doesn't need to be worn out in public. And it's funny to watch little kids do this, and that they struggle at putting those on because it's new to them. It's new to clothe themselves. Normally, I'm used to my parents doing that, clothing me, and now they've given me the chance. I don't know exactly what to do. But as they grow, it becomes that idea of muscle memory, that we get up, we put on clothes, and we go about our day. Now, hopefully, we don't think too much about putting on clothes and carrying on with our day. And I tell you, this morning, I struggled putting on my clothes because I've gained a few pounds, and it's about time to get a new suit. But for the most part, we don't struggle. It's muscle memory. It's built into us. And I see that that's exactly what Paul is saying about this list that he's going to put out there for us, that we are to simply put these things on and live throughout our day without even knowing they're there, but they should be there. Now, I say all this, and this is a weird intro, because I'm not going to go over any of verses 12 through 17 today. I actually planned on next week going over the specific things that Paul talks about here in verses 12 through 17. But this morning, as we open up to Colossians chapter 3, I want to get the context. I want to make sure that I get the full context as to why Paul is specifically saying these things, and even more so, what does he say that needs to precede leading up to this point and putting these things on? And what we're going to find out in our study this morning is that there are things that we need to put off before you can ever put on, right? Well, we understand that again, going back to the idea of our clothing. I will not put on a clean shirt over a dirty shirt. That doesn't make any sense. I don't think any of us do that. But what Paul is going to show us is that is the same in our spiritual lives, that we are to put off before we put on. So with that said, go back to the start of the chapter. And there are some things in the context that I want us to point out and make mention of. And the very first one here in chapter 3 and verse 1, the very first phrase he uses is going to be the phrase that I hope you remember throughout today's lesson and next Sunday's. He says, "If then you were raised with Christ." If there is important. If you have been raised with Christ, then the things I'm about to say are very important to you, right? But that if is important. Because if not, what good will the things I say after this, what good will it be to you if you have not been raised with Christ? From the very beginning, Paul makes it clear that these characteristics that we're going to talk about are for those who have simply been raised with Christ. And if you haven't, they will have no effect. Now, he gets this, we get even more context going back into chapter 2 because he describes what that being raised with Christ is. You know, our world today gets so confused with the idea of baptism. And we understand as Christians that throughout the Scripture, baptism is an important part of the Christian life because that's the point in which I am connected with Christ, that I'm buried with Christ. And in that moment, I'm connected. My sins are washed away. I've received that redemption that was promised by God. And yet that idea is so tossed up and thrown about in today's world. We have many who believe that baptism is everything. That's an extreme that the world takes, that baptism is all you need. And once you're baptized, that's it. You can do whatever you want. You're good. The grace of God has covered you. It will continue to cover you no matter what. And there are others who take it to the opposite extreme, that baptism is just purely symbolic. It's symbolic. You've been saved, but if you want to show others you've been saved, then you can be dunked in water. That's all good and well. And there are people who will even go to the Apostle Paul and say, look, Paul didn't want to baptize people, so obviously it's not that important. And what you see is they pull that from 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 14, where he says, I thank God I didn't baptize most of you. But if you look at the context, the reason being that he didn't want to baptize most of them is because they were lifting up the baptizer instead of the one they were baptized into. We see that over and over throughout the first chapter in 1 Corinthians that they're lifting up Apollos and they're lifting up Cephas and they're lifting up Paul saying, look who baptized me, and yet they forget who they're being baptized into. And that's why Paul said, I'm glad I didn't baptize many of you. He didn't want to take the place of Jesus in these people's minds. But you'll see that people will say Paul didn't want to baptize. And I think here in Colossians chapter 2, that idea is debunked very quickly. In chapter 2 and verse 11, notice what Paul says. In him you were also circumcised with the circumcision made without hands, by putting off the body of sins of the flesh, by circumcision of Christ, buried with him in baptism, in which you were also raised with him through faith in the working of God, who raised him from the dead, and you being dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he made alive together with him, having forgiven you all your trespasses. What Paul clearly says is it's at that point that you choose to be buried with Christ that you're raised with Christ. And that's clear throughout all of Paul's teaching and throughout all of the apostles' teaching, that baptism is the point in which we're raised. And that's important for us to know because, like I said, it's so confused so often. And it's important for us to give that defense of the gospel, of what we believe and know to be true about baptism and the acceptance of Christ and the contact we have with him. That if in chapter 3 and verse 1 is important. And as I said before, I want us to see that as we go throughout the remainder of our lesson. That if is important. If you have been raised with Christ, if you have been baptized into Christ, then these things apply to you. So with that said, the first thing I noticed, that if we're raised with Christ, then we are offered new opportunities. You see that clearly from verse 1 in chapter 3. That if you have been raised with Christ, then these things I'm about to say are offered to you. And how blessed we are to have these things offered to us. Secondly, the thing I see is that if we're being raised with Christ, if we've been raised with Christ, it should lead to a new mindset. Continue on in verse 1 of chapter 3. After he says, if we've been raised with Christ, he says, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on earth, not on earthly things, but things that are above. For you died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you will also appear with him in glory. He expounds on what he's talking about in verse 2 by saying our minds, our mindsets need to be on things above. They don't need to be on things of this earth, because the things of this earth, if we are attached to them, it pulls our focus off of God, off of those things that are above, off of those things that are lasting and not temporary. Those things that are corruptible can overshadow the things that are incorruptible. And what Paul says is you focus and keep your mind and that mindset you have on a daily basis. You keep it on things that are above. You know, I'm reminded of, hold your place there in Romans chapter 6. Romans chapter 6, a verse that goes hand in hand here in Colossians chapter 3. Paul, writing to the Romans, asked them a simple question. Should we continue in sin so that grace may abound? And that's a rhetorical question, because he follows up with no. That should never be the case. We should never continue in the same lifestyle and the same mindset that we had before we were raised with Christ. He says in verse 1 of Romans chapter 6, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Certainly not. How shall we who died to sin live any longer in it? Or do you not know that as many of us as were baptized into Christ were baptized into his death? Therefore, we were buried with him through baptism into death, that just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. What we see in both of these passages is that when we are raised with Christ, the mindset and the way of living that I should be following after is totally different. It's totally different than that lifestyle and that mindset I had before I put on Christ. He says that clearly, both to the Romans and to the Colossians. And he goes on in Colossians 3 to say, you know, because of that mindset, Christ is going to remember you. And he's going to keep you hidden from the world. The world is going to see what you believe and the way you think and the way you act. They're going to see the places you go and do not go. They're going to see the things that you stay away from and don't cling to as the world does, and they're going to wonder why. Why? We don't understand. The meaning behind all this is hidden from us. Now, I think about what Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 4, in verse 4. You don't have to turn there. Just listen. After listing his own list of things that we once were involved in, but no longer are, as we're different, as our mindset is different, he says in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 4, in regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run in the same flood of dissipation with them, speaking evil of you. They just don't understand. And what Paul says in Colossians is that Christ is going to keep you hidden. You're going to be separated from the world. That's how we ought to be. You think of Romans chapter 12. We're not to be conformed to the world, but transformed by the renewing of what? Our minds. Our minds. Our mindset is different. The way and the things that we focus on is totally different, because it's all pointed towards Christ and to the things above. And I want to make one side note here, too, is that when we say this, it almost seems like we're going through life and we're looking up and we're not noticing anything around us. We're going about just blindly. We're not seeing anything in the world. That's impossible. We can't go through this life in the world without looking at things around us. But what we do is we see God in everything. We see God in everything that we do and everything that we know. I've seen this in my life several times. In certain things that I used to partake in or to do that I enjoyed before I was a Christian, I can still do them because they weren't sinful then and they're not sinful now. But I've seen how I've incorporated God in those things, how I've turned conversations as I'm going about those things. I've turned conversations into talking about spiritual things, talking about spiritual matters. If other people are partaking in those things with me, I want to turn those things into time of fellowship, time for upbuilding and encouragement. We see that if we can change our mindset, the things around us that even weren't sinful in nature, they can be changed to put forth a spiritual nature and a spiritual meaning behind them. Christ says, I'll keep you hidden. And one day, I will appear and you will appear with me in glory. He gives us that promise over and over again throughout his life on earth and as the apostles were speaking for him, that Christ will be back and he'll bring us to a place that's so much more worth it than this. But he says, keep your mind on those things above. How important that is, because when we have years like we did last year, how quickly our mind can be pulled down, from the things above, and can we just focus on what we see ahead of us, what we see going around us. We see brethren sick. We see brethren dying. We see all of this pain, and yet our focus should be on spiritual things. And because of that, we can be led to help in spiritual ways. So the second thing I see is that being raised with Christ should lead to a new mindset. Paul goes on in Colossians chapter 3, after verse 4, talking about the mindset, he then gets to the lifestyle specifically. What we see being raised with Christ should lead to a new lifestyle. In verse 5, Colossians 3 says, "Therefore put to death your members, which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, in which you yourselves once walked when you lived in them." What Paul does here is he gives another kind of list, one that we didn't start off reading. And this list is the exact opposite. This is the idea of things we are to put off. That's what I was getting at the start of the lesson. That Paul says you are to put off before you ever think about putting on. That's how it works. It makes sense in our minds that we are to put off those things that are dirty before we can be fully clean. You know, when we read Romans chapter 6, that very last verse, verse 4, ended by saying, "Even so we should walk in newness of life." The newness of life that he speaks of is not only spiritual, but it is the physical life and the things we take part in and the things that we stay away from. And that carries on with this mindset attitude, that not only our mind has changed, but our life. Paul gives two really different categories here in verses 5 through 7 that really display the idea of keeping our mind on the world versus keeping our mind on things above. He talks about first the lusts of the flesh. And you see that in the first, first four things he mentions, fornication, giving us the idea of extramarital sexual relations. We understand that there is a place for those things, and it's been set in place by God. And any difference, any change that we make to that is fornication. And Paul leads off with that one. Going along, he says uncleanness. And sometimes we pass over those things because, yeah, we're not supposed to be dirty as Christians. We're supposed to be clean, pure, as white as snow, just as Christ was white as snow. We're supposed to be cleansed. So I pass over this a lot, but you look up the Greek word that Paul uses here, and it actually refers more to our thoughts. This one probably could have been in our last point, more towards the mindset, having clean thoughts instead of just unclean actions. Keeping our mind pure, keeping our mind moral and morally right, godly. He goes on to say passion. The Greek word for passion is pathos. And the literal meaning is an inordinate or excessive affection. It gives the idea that we are so affected, we're so connected to the things that might be on this earth that pulls our affection that is deserved by God and God alone. It pulls us down to this earth, and you see this over and over. Finally, he says evil desire. The two words, the Greek words that are used for that literally means a desire for what is forbidden. You know, I've seen, and I'm going back again to little kids. For some reason, I'm thinking a lot about little kids. I don't know why. It might be the six-month-old at my house. But you see these videos of little kids, and it's funny because parents will set them down at the kitchen table or on a bar stool, and they'll put a piece of candy or a cookie in front of them, and then they'll just say, "Now don't eat this. I got to go in the other room, but I'll be right back, and then you can eat it." Have you seen those videos? You see, as the parent walks out, and the second that door closes, the desire in that kid's eyes goes straight to the candy. It goes straight to, and it's like it's just eating at them. You can see it. Kids have a great way of showing exactly what they're feeling. They're looking, they're licking their lips, they're wanting that candy or the cookie or whatever it is. I saw one video of a girl who was so tempted by, I think it was a marshmallow, that she picked up the marshmallow and she just had to taste it. She put it in her mouth and held it there. She didn't chew it. She didn't swallow it. She held it there so that when her mom came in, she was able to spit it out and put it back, and everything was fine. Nothing happened. Now, she didn't know her mom was videoing. But you see the desire that they have. And you say, well, that's cute. That's funny. But that's the exact desire that we might see, say, in Adam and Eve. As they were in the garden and they were told by God, this is forbidden. This is forbidden. You don't take of this one tree. Everything else is fair game. This one tree. And as the serpent comes to Eve, and she is deceived by him, that mentions that the tree was a desirable tree in Genesis 3. It was desirable to her. She looked at that tree and realized what it could give her, to give Adam, and she partook of it. That very same desire, if we're not careful, can affect us. The desire that we have for worldly things can pull us away from the things that God has strictly forbidden. So Paul lists these things and says, put these things off. Take them off as you're preparing to put on clean and righteous and godly characteristics. And the last one he mentions here, those first four are lust of the flesh. The last one is more towards the love of the world. Covetousness, more towards the love of the world and the things therein. I looked up the Greek word for this, and I'm not even going to attempt to say it, but it does start with a P, and I'll let you see my notes after the lesson if you want to. But the literal meaning is either a greedy desire to have more, a greedy desire to have more possessions in this life, or avarice. Now, how many of you have looked into what the word avarice means? Avarice is a step further than just greed. I remember when I read that definition, I had this book called The Seven Deadly Sins Today, written by Henry Fairley. I don't know much about this man. But I had to read this when I was down in Auburn for a certain class. And I remembered that he specifically spoke on avarice and what it was and the danger that it is for us in the United States today. And I wanted to read you two lines that he wrote here. The first thing he writes is that avarice is not so much the love of possessions as it is the love of merely possessing. It's not the idea of, I love these things I've accumulated, I get to have some entertainment, I get to enjoy these things. It's simply the love for just having it, possessing it, knowing that I have it and some others don't. He goes on to say, to buy what we do not need, more even than we need for our pleasure or entertainment, is a love of possessing for its own sake. We love possessing. It's not the possession, it's the possessing. And he ends his thoughts on avarice, and he explains it in a way more eloquently than I could ever do. But he talks about this king who was buried with all of his jewels. And there was an exhibition where people could come visit and see all the things that were in his tomb. He says, those who have seen the exhibition treasures must in the end find something ghastly in it. We think of the body of the king sealed with all his riches, his riches for all those centuries in a dark and airless chamber. And when that tomb is opened, his body has decomposed. But the gold and the alabaster have kept their substance and form and the glitter as brightly as ever. What is absent from them is the king himself. They tell us of his majesty, in other words, of his status, but they tell us nothing about the man. They don't tell us anything about the king. And he says, we look back at those treasures. We look back at the treasures, and with all their brilliance and art, they are decadent but meaningless. We think back to the king. We think back to the king among his treasures, and he is an object only, buried among other objects. It was they that survived. And notice what he points out. I find this to be a good correlation to what we're talking about. That perhaps we have gone to the exhibition in a large number because we are looking at something we can understand. At the contents was the objects, or at the contents of the tomb from which, when the stone was rolled away, it was the objects and not the man that rose again, in which the man had become the most lifeless of all objects. If we look straightforwardly at our societies now, how can we deny that this is an image of us? What he says is that if we become that way, if we take on that avarice or that covetousness that Paul is speaking on, to where we care so much about the possessions that they end up possessing us, then we lose the thought that it's truly our Savior and Jesus that we're to be looking to. We replace Jesus with those things we care about more in this life. And you can fill in the blank of what those things could be. It could be a number of things. But we are in danger if we are being covetous, as Paul warns of replacing Christ with those possessions. And that's exactly why, that as we're looking here in Colossians 3, after he says covetousness, he follows it with what? Which is idolatry. Which is idolatry? Which is these things that can take the place of God and spiritual things and can bring us low on this earth. He says to watch out, to put off the lust of the flesh and the love of the world. He says to put things off and focus on Christ. Because if we don't, in verses 6 and 7, because of the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, in which you yourselves once walked when you lived in them. He reminds us, that's where you were. You're not there anymore. There's a new mindset. There's a new lifestyle. And now we are to put on Christ-likeness. I'll skip verses 8 through 9 because, again, he gives us another list of what to put off. And notice he does specifically say in verse 8, put off all these things. The idea of taking clothing off. It's the exact opposite phrase that he used there in verse 12. To take off these things and put on Christ-likeness. I like how he ends, and this is how we'll wrap up. In verse 10, he says, have put on the new man who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who created him, where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcised nor uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave nor free, but Christ is in all and in, or Christ is all and in all. What we see is the last thing that he says is that being raised with Christ, we should live a life of Christ-likeness, that we should be just as Christ was. Our knowledge is renewed daily according to Christ and his image. That's what he says there in verse 10. And he goes on in 11 to tell us that we're no longer divided. There's nothing in this world that can divide us because we are one in Christ. And you can fill in, you can take out Greek nor Jew there and put in anything that could divide us. And we understand that we are for Christ. Those things don't separate us anymore. As I said, we wanted to get the context this morning. I thank you for bearing with me. But I'm looking forward to next week as we expound upon verses 12 through 17 and we look at the specific things that Christ says, this is what you need to wear throughout your daily life. But remember, as I've said several times this morning, and as I hope that we remember as we go over these things next week, that it all started with verse 1, if you have been raised with Christ. If you have been raised with Christ. This morning, if you have been raised with Christ, then you understand you can partake in these things. But we also understand that they're tough. They're tough to apply. They're tough to put on. Sometimes things are tough to take off. And if that's been you this morning or this past week, this past year, if that's been you to put off these things, allow your brethren to help you. I'm not specifically saying you have to come to the front and let us all know, but reach out to your brethren in some way, form, or fashion so that we can pray and we can also take action together. If we can help you this morning, we ask that you come as we stand and as we sing.